Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you again to another episode of the Project 223 podcast from the Eagle's Nest in the beautiful Pacific Northwest of Washington State. Sun's shining today, but who knows, in a half an hour it might be raining again. Some crazy weather we're having. But hope you're all enjoying springtime, getting out there in your gardens and planning to be self-resilient, self-reliant and resilient. Have some food growing in your gardens, fruit trees, hopefully, and maybe some chickens. Get some stuff in your gardens and your yard to help you be able to take care of yourself and your family when tough times come. You don't want to be reliant on the grocery stores, the supermarkets. When things go bad, you want to be able to help yourself and your family and your friends. So use this time in the spring to prepare. And as we're talking about preparing, in the spirit of preparedness, in that vein, I'd like to talk to you today about groups and community. We've talked about before how to build mutual assistance groups, how to build a team, a tribe, a group of people in your life that you can use to, not use, but that will help you and your family be safe and secure, and that you can also help that family be safe and secure. So you're using each other to help meet goals that you need in your life. Nobody's going to be able to survive as a lone wolf when things get bad in the future. Currently now, people can easily sit in their homes and watch Netflix at night and then go to work in the morning. And you don't really have to interact with your neighbors or other people if you don't want to. Everything's secure and safe. And you can, if you have a problem, somebody prowling around outside your house, you can call 911 and, you know, hopefully a police officer shows up and not too long of a time and can make sure that your home's safe and secure outside. But that may not be the case as things go forward. It hasn't been the case throughout history. The majority of history, people have had to take their own safety and security into their own hands. So as you go look back in time, people, there used to be villages, and those villages, even in areas where there's lots of land, people didn't have individual farms spread way out from other people. You see these villages and communities that would have all the you know, where there was a castle with walls around it, or whether it was you know, a small community, they would build the huts and the houses close together, and then the farming land would be out around that. And the big thing on that would be for security. I was listening to Pastor Joe Fox from Viking Preparedness yesterday talk about an interesting talk about some stories about that, and that was kind of the way things used to be. So being able to help secure your neighborhood and your community and your family and friends is a really important thing. So I thought today I'd hit on a few different types of groups you may have in your life, communities and types of community, and then things you might want to try and build in your life that would help you to take care of your family and that you can also be able to take care of other people. This is an interdependent thing. It's not a... you're taking from somebody else or taking from you, but you're working together to help each other. So that's kind of the goal here, is that you build relationships. And we all do that in our lives. We have, starting off with family. Let's just get right into it. Family is an important group in our life. And we all have you know, some type of family, whether it's a mother and father. And it depends on your situation, but your immediate family is the first most important unit. So you might be a single person, and that's okay. That's your family, is you and your home. But you may have a wife and or kids. So when I talk immediate family, it's your wife and dependent children. So that's kind of your first priority in life, is taking care of yourself and your wife, your home. And then if you have those dependent kids in your house, that's an important thing to think about. You might also have grown children. And so those grown children may live close to you, or they may live far away from you. And then you may have grandkids as well. So then some people have bigger families than others. And then you get to extended family, like aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, and nephews. So in each of these types of groups, I want to talk about a couple things. I want to talk about some of the pros and cons of those groups, and specifically when it comes to preparedness, when it comes to being ready for any future problems that may come. And so I'm not just talking about your everyday life. I mean, that's important. But when it comes to thinking about, hey, I want to be ready. The Bible says the wise man sees trouble and prepares, but the fool keeps going and suffers. Well, we want to be wise. We see potential problems in the future with the breakdown of civility, with the supply chain issues, with possible financial issues. Iran just shot missiles and rockets and drones at Israel. They've vowed to retaliate. The world definitely has a lot of chaos going on right now, and so we want to be sure that we're ready for those troubles if they should come. So when it comes to family, what are some of the pros and cons of your family as far as preparedness? Well, obviously, the pros of family is that's your blood. That's the people, your wife that you love, your children that you're raising and that you love, and then your blood family, they're connected to you. It's an important part of your life. The Bible says if any man does not take care of his mother and father, you know, that you're supposed to respect them and that your life would go well for you and you would live long in the land. And so you're supposed to respect your parents and take care of them, care for them. So that's very important. So it's the pros, your family is your blood and they're connected to you by that. Some of the cons with family, you can't pick your family. You're kind of stuck with them. You've gotten who you've got. So they may see differently than you when it comes to political things. They may not be into preparedness at all. They might not like firearms and may not think guns are bad and scary. And you want to try to use them to protect the family, but they don't want to have anything to do with them. So that could be some of the negative issues when it comes to family and preparedness. And so I wanted each one of these, when we talk about pros and cons, I also want to talk about three different criteria that we're going to kind of judge those things on. And that would be the level of capability, the level of commitment, and then the level of confidentiality. So those are three criteria we're going to talk about on each one of these groups. Well, obviously with the family, capability, that one's kind of tough with family. Your wife may not find it's as important to talk about two-way radios and how to put on a tourniquet and how to shoot as you do. And so you might try to do that, and it's not not something that's high on her radar. So capability levels, and then with your kids, you know, you can take them out, but they might be more interested in playing Call of Duty than they are actually going to the range and learning how to shoot. So it just depends on how you raise them and what their personal preferences are in life. So capability is not going to be quite as high when it comes to your immediate family. You may get lucky and have, you know, a brother that thinks like-minded than you and you know, and other family members that have similar thoughts as far as preparedness go. But the chances are a lot of times that the capability level of your family is a little lower than some of the other types of groups that we're going to talk about. Commitment. Obviously, you're committed to your family. You should be committed to your wife as the number one person in your life. And so between you and her and God, that's your first priority. So the commitment level is going to be very high when it comes to family. They're going to be committed to you. You're going to be committed to them. And then confidentiality. Hopefully your wife, you're able to have a good relationship there and you can say, hey, these are certain things about our life that we keep confidential. And you might not want to tell somebody if you've got an underground bunker that's supplied with 20 years worth of freeze-dried food. I wish we could get to that level, but, you know, so if your confidentiality with your family should be a little higher, that's a good thing with family. And you see that a lot nowadays, people that are setting up family plots of land where they buy a big piece of land and then they bring mom and dad onto the land and get them a house, and brother and his wife have a house over there on the same piece of land. And or maybe just plots of land that are close together, where you can work together to help each other out as a little homestead type of thing. And that would be really cool if you could do something like that. To me, that's ideal. If you could bring, if you get along enough, well enough with your family that you could live close together, support each other, take care of each other, and live a great resilient life like that. So that's a great option for people to think about. Next type of group that I'm going to talk about is some of your casual friends. So these would be people like you know, friends from church or friends that you have from school that you've graduated from school with and you kind of still keep in touch with and hang out with once in a while. Maybe you go to Husky games together or whatever. And maybe you have friends from work that you like to hang out with and you get along well enough with them. And so then sometimes you like to go bowling or go do different things. So casual friends. So when we talk about casual friends, what are some of the pros and cons with casual friends when it comes to preparedness specifically? Well, some of those relationships might be long-term relationships. If you have a bunch of guys that you went to high school with and you've known each other for, you know, 6-7 years, well, those are strong bonds that are there. And obviously you wouldn't keep those relationships going if you didn't have a good friendship. So that's some of the pros of those types of relationships. But some of the cons when it comes to preparedness with casual friends is they might not necessarily be as like-minded as you or see the importance of being ready for future disaster and emergencies. So that's some of the cons that are there with the casual friends. Now, on our three criteria with casual friends, their capability is probably going to be a little more on the lower side. They aren't necessarily are going to be as trained and as skilled as you are when it comes to preparedness skills. Commitment is going to be a little bit on the higher range, right? They're not quite blood family, but they're also people that you've had relationships with for a long time. So you're going to be probably mid-range when it comes to the commitment level. And then the confidentiality, well, it kind of depends, but I would say you're probably at a mid-level as well there. Like say they're not, they're maybe mid to high on confidentiality. They're close friends, so they're going to be hopefully keeping any information you share with them that's important secret. But they also, they're not blood family. So anyways, that's where I would say with our three criteria when it comes to casual friends. Now moving out from there, another important group of people in your life that you should be considering is your neighborhood. These would be the people that live close by you. If you've done any area intelligence planning, done any area studies, then this would be known as your area of operations. If you took a look at Mike Shelby, and he has a Forward Observer company, and they do a lot of talk about helping people do area studies, which means finding out the information in the place that you live and gathering intelligence so that you know important things about your neighborhood and your community. So a neighborhood's important. This might be what you'd call your community, a block watch area. It could be a homeowners association, a neighborhood association. These would be the people in your within walking distance of your house. And so it just kind of depends on what kind of neighborhood you live in on how big that would be. But you don't want that to be too big. Some of the pros of having a good, strong neighborhood community when it comes to preparedness would be that these are the people that are kind of what you'd call a stone's throw away from your house. You're able to watch what's going on around their house, and they're able to see what's going on around your house. If a couple trucks full of ne'er-do-wells would pulled up and were trying to knock on your door and do some type of home invasion, these would be the people that would possibly see that happening and could come rapidly to your aid to help you and your family. They have a vested interest as well in the security of your neighborhood. You all want your neighborhood to be a safe, secure place to live. You don't want there to be problems and trouble, so they have the same, they value that as much as you do. But some of the cons with a neighborhood would be you can't necessarily pick your neighbors. Now, that's if you live in a place where you're just starting to build this mindset now. But you could move to a certain area. So that's the importance of picking a location wisely. If you decide that, hey, I'm going to move, I'm going to find a place that's more, that's safer with people that are more like-minded than myself so that I can get away from a city where there seems to be a lot of unrest. Even just yesterday, there was protesters blocking the freeway. I had a friend of mine that was trying to pick up his wife and mother-in-law at the airport and had very great difficulty getting there because it was blocked by protesters, the highway was. So you may say, I don't want to live in an area that allows people to do that type of thing or that has a lot of people that want to do that type of thing. So picking a location is a smart thing to do and, you know, using your being wise about that and using some of these criteria we're talking about. So you want to make sure, too, that, if you do pick one, you might want to pick something that has the same political and philosophical views that you do. But that might be a con to the neighborhood you're in, is that not everybody may think the way you do. And that's okay. They don't have to think exactly like you do. But if you decide that because of home invasions and the 911 system's not working and all of a sudden you want to protect your family and your neighborhood and you decide with some other neighbors that you're going to put up a roadblock to block the access, you may find that there's neighbors that say, hey, you can't do that. You're not the law. What gives you the right? and they don't see the value in protecting the neighborhood from hoodlums that you do. So you need to think about those things ahead of time. So that could be a con to the people in your neighborhood as a group and a community. So the three criteria that we use to talk about different groups like this, as far as capability goes, well, you're going to get what you get in your neighborhood. So unless you personally take some steps to reach out to those people, to provide some trainings and encourage them, you may or may not have people that have the capabilities that you do, comes to medical or communications or mobility, things of that nature. But one of the cool things that you can do is if you provide training and classes for those neighbors, like say, for example, you say, hey, we're going to have on a Sunday afternoon for 2 hours, we're going to talk about food and water storage, and I want to help you learn how to have some extra water and food set aside for disasters and emergency. And you can show people how to take a 5-gallon bucket and a Mylar bag and a 25-pound bag of rice with some oxygen absorbers, put the rice in the bag, the oxygen absorbers, seal up the bag with an iron, and now they've got some staple food that will last them for quite a few years in case of an emergency. You could do a small training session like that and show people things, and they'd be very grateful for that. Not only will they be happy and thankful that you're providing them a service, but now they're more prepared, and they're less likely to come to you and say, hey, we don't have any food, because you've shown them how to prepare food for themselves. Teach a man to fish. If you give a man a fish, you know the story. Give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach a man a fish, and he eats for a lifetime. So that's the benefit of doing that. Now, I have our three criteria when it comes to neighborhood as far as a community group and the importance of that. The capabilities, well, we're saying capabilities is going to be, it's going to vary. You may have a police officer or a former Green Beret living next to you, or the guy may work at Microsoft and on computers and may not have any of that information. So capabilities could vary. Commitment level, that's going to be kind of mid-range there. I think they're committed in as of the fact that they don't want the neighborhood to be overrun or be a place that's unsafe, just like you do. But by the same token, you don't have the strong relationship with them as far as it's not blood or a long-standing friendship. So that could vary a little bit as far as their commitment level. And then confidentiality. You can't necessarily guarantee that they're going to keep your information secure. So that would pretty much kind of be a low to a mid-range when it comes to confidentiality. The next group I like to talk about when it comes to preparedness and building community and friendships would be, I'd call this the training friends or a training group. Now, these would be some like-minded people that you meet in the area, like somewhat close to your area, but they have the same goals and that you do, and as far as like wanting to be prepared and wanting to train to be capable as far as when it comes to security or food storage, communications, medical. So they might have a lot of the same thoughts that you do about those things. They're like-minded. And these would be you'd kind of call this maybe the hobby club friends that, you know, we want to talk about guns. We want to talk about preparedness stuff. And, you know, it's kind of a get together and have fun together when it's convenient. So the pros are that you get along well with these people. They're like-minded. They're great people. And you have fun training together. And you have lots of mutual interests. But with this type of group, some of the cons would be is that they might not live close to you. So if you have a friend that lives half an hour away and they're like-minded and they're good training friends, but now there's an earthquake or there's civil unrest and things of that nature, you may not be able to get to that person to help them. And they're not able to get to you to help you. So that's going to be a challenge. They're going to need to be securing their own neighborhood and their own home. And so that's a tough thing when it comes to their being there for those people. Another thing is it's not an organized group. So this would be that everybody kind of does what they want and they come when they want and they go when they want and train when they want. But you don't necessarily know what level they're at in certain things. And they may be great when it comes to shooting guns, but when it comes to using the radios, you might not be able to get a hold of them. Or when it comes to medical, they might not be able to help you should you have a life-threatening emergency. So that's one of the cons of this type of group. And also, too, these friends may have families that lead completely separate lives than you and your family. So as where you and your training buddy like to, you know, go shooting and take a class together and have fun, his wife might not be interested in that stuff at all. Or, you know, he may have completely different type of lifestyle and friendships or family relationships than you do. And so if your family and their family don't get along and don't know each other, do you think that when the bad times come and the stuff hits the fan, that you're going to bond together with them and want to have similar goals and, you know, desires when it comes to living together and trying to help each other? So that's something to think about. Also, too, they might not be completely on board when it comes to preparedness. So that's some definitely important part of that type of group. And also, too, there has to be a foundation that's based on trust. And so that comes with relationships, spending time together, and having a, you know, a mutual desires and goals. So you maybe enjoy training and shooting together, but you don't really necessarily know who that person is. So those are our three criteria on that. Capability, well, this is going to be a very high capability level. These training friends are going to have a lot of the similar skills that you do. But when it comes to commitment, that's a little more down in the mid-range to lower range. They're committed as far as if it's something that they enjoy to do and want to do. But if it's not something they're interested in, they're not necessarily going to do it. And as far as the confidentiality goes, that's a kind of a mid-range as well. It all depends on that person. And if you don't have the deeper relationships there, if you haven't spent time together with them, and if there's not a level of commitment, then the confidentiality may or may not be as strong. Another type of group that we can talk about, and we just discussed this recently with guys from the Enlightened Neanderthals podcast, Tobin, Mike, and Jordan. We had a great talk about the modern-day Minuteman. And as I was thinking about it, and I realized doing a little research that in history, the modern-day Minuteman, he was part of a group that was pulled out of the militia of a certain area of a geographical location by their commanding officers to be a team of guys that were more elite fighters that were trained, highly capable, and ready to respond at a very short notice. And they picked these people based on their enthusiasm and their abilities. So I picked another team that we could talk about, and that would be kind of the modern day Minuteman team. And this would be a small group that you may have, and I know guys that have parts of that are part of groups like this, and they're highly trained and they're very committed to being very good at what they do. And kind of the main focus usually on these is going to be for security. So these are guys that they know how to use a rifle, they know how to use a pistol, and they have gear that can make them effective when it comes to providing security. So it's a highly trained, small group of committed people, and they're ready to defend their communities, their families, and their country. Now, some of the pros of a group like this, you're going to have people that are very like-minded, and they have a high level of capability. They work together. They spend lots of time training. They've gotten to know each other. They kind of can know what the other person's thinking, and they can work well together as a team. And they have a common goal. They're like-minded in what they're trying to do. Some of the cons of a group like this is that it really takes a lot of discipline and time to do, to train and to do this. And so some of these things that you're actually training for are very low probability, but a highly serious type of circumstances that can happen. So they're doing a lot of training for something that may or may not ever take place. So it also could be misunderstood by some people in a negative light. Somebody that wants to be trained to be able to provide security for, like I said, the community and your country and your family. People that are tyrannical may not like that, because then you're a person who can stand up against tyranny and against evil. So that could be an issue for some. Now, of the three criteria we talked about for grading different groups, as far as capability goes, you're going to be a high level of capability in a group like this. The commitment level is going to be very high as well. And also, too, the confidentiality, I would believe that that's going to be high in this group as well. So as far as our three criteria go, this type of group right now, as far as what we've talked about so far, is way up there. But like we said, it takes a lot of time, discipline, and effort to be part of a group like that. And then finding the right people that you could do that with is also a challenge. And then last but not least, I'd like to talk about a mutual assistance group. So a lot of people, they call them a MAG, mutual assistance group. This would be the type of group that says, hey, we're going to pledge to be there for each other through thick and thin. We're going to have we have a common mindset, and we're going to have goals together. And this type of group decides on some type of structure and organization for their group so that they can work together and accomplish the goals that they're trying to get to. The pros to a group like this is that you're highly trained. You've decided that, hey, we're going to work together. We're going to set goals and train each other up to a certain level so that we all are able to help each other and all able to pull our weight. You also can pick the people you want in a group like that. So you don't just, it's not like a Kiwanis Club or something where anybody can come and join, but it's a group that you can select members, you can vet them, and pick people that have a like-minded attitude. And also, too, you're working together as a team to accomplish common goals. So those are some of the pros of the group like that. Another pro to me that I've experienced is that you're there with that person anytime, whether it's a societal collapse, disasters, natural disasters, or emergencies, or whether it's just regular everyday life. Somebody needs to borrow a certain tool, or somebody needs help on their heater's not working in their house, or their car's broke down, or their daughter's car's broke down, and you need somebody to come and help you. When you have a mutual assistance group, you have capable people that are ready to help you through life. And that's a great thing to have. Now, what are some of the cons of a mutual assistance group as opposed to some of the other groups we've talked about? Well, one of the important things is you need buy-in by the person's families as well as themselves. So it's challenging when you have somebody that's in a mutual assistance group, but if their family's not bought in, that's difficult, because we already talked about earlier, family should be your first priority in your life. So it's always going to be important to make sure that when somebody comes as part of your group, that their families know what's going on, know what the group's about, and then are willing to also sacrifice some time for the training and what it takes for that group to be successful, the requirements of that group, and that to realize that if you are deciding that, hey, we're going to count on each other, when things go bad, we're going to meet up, we're going to connect and get together and provide and protect each other, well, you got to realize if those families don't know each other, that's going to be a challenging situation. Also, too, you really need to be close by to be effective as a mutual assistance group. So if you've got people that live 45 minutes away from each other by vehicle or, in another county, that's going to be a challenge to help them when things get really bad. During normal good times, you'll be able to do some training together and have fun and help each other on small emergencies. But when stuff really goes bad, if that's what you're counting on to rescue you and your family, you may not be in a position to make that happen. So that's something that's important to think about. Also, too, it's difficult to motivate people in large groups, especially in a volunteer-type organization. Regular life happens. People have jobs. They have kids. They have sports. They have houses to take care of, cars to work on. And so to make a commitment to train for things like teaching radios, self-defense, food storage, things of those natures, those are things that are important but not necessarily urgent. And so when people decide that, hey, I need to take care of these urgent things, and it's not necessarily bad or wrong, it's just the way life is, but it's difficult to make sure that people stay on track and continue to have the same motivation as when they start. A lot of times people will start off strong and they move along for a while and then decide that, the EMP hasn't hit yet, the earthquake hasn't happened, I've been preparing for 6 months, 2 years, 5 years, I think I'm going to move on. Well, that can be challenging for a group, so something to think about. Now, when it comes to our three criteria for a mutual assistance group, your capability is going to be high, because that group of people is training together, they're working together, they're structured and organization that are provided to guide people along so that everybody is not unbalanced in their preparations, but they have a well-balanced skills set. When it comes to the commitment level, that can vary. There needs to be a high commitment, but depending on the group, that level can vary based on family relationships. So commitment level, medium to high. And then confidentiality. Hopefully that among the group you have an agreement to where people keep other people's personal private information private. So that's important. But there's always the risk that somebody can become disgruntled, or there could be a family member or something that decides that they want to expose the fact that you have a group of people who have capabilities and resources. So that could be important to be thinking about and making sure that once a group starts getting big, the confidentiality needs to be thought about, and make sure that you just keep things on a need-to-know basis a little less out in the open. So thinking about those groups, what type of groups are you part of? Do you have a family that you've talked about with preparedness? How about some casual friends? Are any of those people like-minded or have thought about these things? Have you looked into a neighborhood group forming a block watch? Maybe you're part of an HOA, and you could ask them if they want to have some preparedness training that you could provide free of charge to help out. Maybe you have training friends you've met when you've been out at a shooting class or other types of classes. Maybe you're a member of a group such as American Contingency or PrepperNet, and you've met people in those groups. Maybe you are fortunate enough to have a modern-day Minuteman team or a mutual assistance group that you're a part of. If you are, I'd like to encourage you. That is an amazing thing that you have. Not many people are part of a group like that. And to think about the fact that it's like putting savings in your savings account. It's like having life insurance. It's like working out or eating healthy. You may not see the immediate results now, but you're preparing for the future. You're being the wise man that sees the trouble and prepares. You're like one of the 10 virgins in the story, the 10 virgins that were waiting for the wedding feast. They're waiting for the bridegroom to come out of the Bible. We've talked about this story before. And five of the virgins were wise and had oil in their lamps. They were prepared. And there was five that were not. And they thought, though, the bridegroom's a long time in coming, right? Nothing's happening. The world's going on just like it has. The lights are on. The water's flowing. Everything's good. Maybe I can ease off a bit. But then the bridegroom did come. And the five virgins that had oil in their lamps went in with him. But the five that weren't prepared were left outside. And they begged, please, please, give us some of your oil. But they did not give them oil, because if they would have done that, they wouldn't have had their own oil. So the five virgins that were unwise, that weren't prepared, were left outside. So we want everybody to be prepared. We want everybody to have oil in their lamps, to be ready in case of civil unrest or cyber attack, terrorism, all these different things that can happen in our world today. We don't live in fear, but we live in wisdom, thinking about the fact that if I'm ready, if I'm prepared, when the storm blows, the winds blow, my house is built on the rock, and it will stand strong through the storm. So, from the Eagle's Nest, this is Brent from the Project 223, encouraging you to be a part of a group that you can contribute to, you can be committed to take care of each other, to watch each other's backs, to support each other through thick and thin. Don't grow weary in doing good and lose heart. Keep fighting the good fight. Keep the faith. Be strong. Be courageous. Do not be terrified. But be a good friend. Be a good partner. Be a good group member. Love one another as I have loved you, Jesus said. Have a great week, everybody.